Attention, mill spouses, families, and service members. It's now time for another empowering episode of Army Wife Talk Radio, the leading and longest-running podcast of its kind. AWTR is here to engage, educate, and encourage you by sharing dynamic interviews, social media connections, news, and empowering military life information. Here are your AWTR hosts, your Army Wife Network command team.
Hi, my name is Kathleen Palmer, and I'm the content editor here at AWN. This is my first meme, so be kind. I want to take some time and share with you today our journey as a military family that we decided to adopt from foster care, older children. My journey isn't any different than anybody else, but there are some things I would like to share with you and why I think that military families make really good adoptive families as well. So it's not a journey for the weak at heart. It's not a journey with a final destination. It's a journey of growth and of unconditional love. I like to call it a journey of honeymoons, hiccups, and hope. So first of all, let's just start with the why. Why did we decide to adopt so late in life? We were about 10 years into my husband's Army career and our marriage. Why do we think we can do this? Well, what military families can bring to the table, as well as us personally, kind of have a lot in common. So I'm going to pull out three things that I think if you are thinking as a military family of adopting, especially older children from foster care, why I think that we make such great adoptive families in general. So just bear with me and I'll get through all three of them. The first thing, reason is change with structure. We've got it. We know how to PCS and move from zip code to zip code and how to make a home a home. You know, most of the times when foster kids come in to transitional care, they actually can't, you know, they have to find those things for themselves. And in the military life, we already have those things already built. Each duty station kind of has a network or a connection that they and we can tap into. So that really helps. I have not ever met a military spouse on my path of 25 years that has set up a room for a kid last. It's always first. It's always set up the kids' rooms, and then we get to the kitchen and whatever else the mess that we have, because we know how to lessen the impact. And I think that's really a huge thing, is especially with foster kids, is the impact of a transition really is hard. And even with our biological kids, we try to provide them that structure to make it easier for them. Small town America, right? You can free range parent on a military base. So sometimes it's a really neat transition for those kids. The second one is the military community represents diversity, both in culture and race, ethnicity, even religious background. You look at any chapel on any post and there's like seven or eight different types of religious services. I think bringing a foster child into this inclusive environment is something that is really important. One example I'll give you is we actually brought our kids not just to a different, you know, zip code, but also to a whole different culture. We took our kids to Germany when we moved there, of course, and they both had really different experiences. But just being overseas, if any of you have been overseas, you know what that world is like. It's super cool. You get to do neat things. And I'll never forget my youngest, you know, she actually found a really good group of people, and they did a lot of historical things. So she got into the history of the place as an eighth grader. They polished the stepping stones for the Jewish residents that were deported from Wiesbaden, and that was really great. And then my older one, who was in middle school, or high school, excuse me, I mean, she was sitting in front of the Eiffel Tower taking selfie after selfie. And let's face it, who doesn't? She was just like, Mom, I can't believe I live here, you know, and that I'm in front of the Eiffel Tower. And it's just really cool to see them adopt that, what we like to call third world culture. The third culture of military kids that grow up overseas or spend a really big amount of time overseas is fascinating. And so they got to be a part of that. And that was cool. So our community offers that. And just as a side note, if you're really interested in a lot of that perspective, MSEC does a great podcast about the third culture and the military kid. And I think it's dropped in the link below. So the second reason, again, just definitely, you know, brings the diversity, brings the culture change. It's just something that we offer as a military lifestyle. And then lastly, the third reason, before I get into my story, that I think if you're considering it, you should, is just the abundance of resources that are available to you. I know that Chrissy is dropping a few right now down below. There's so much support. There's so much resources and things out there that we really take for granted sometimes as a military community. And I won't throw TRICARE out there because I know that sends heebie-jeebies sometimes up people's spines, but TRICARE has been with us the entire step of the journey from back in 2006. So I really think that, again, the change with structure, the military community representing so many different diversity areas to explore, and then also the access to resources. Those are the three things. So if you're considering it, you have those three things going for you. And I think the rest is all prayer and a lot of positive attitude. So think about it, drop into those resources and check them out. And really, and I'm always available if you have questions on the journey. So now I'm going to tell you a little bit about my journey and hope that doesn't scare you off. But the first phase of our journey is like any phase. We call it the honeymoon phase. And we began ours in 2006 with United Methodist Family Services. And that link is below if you want to check out their programs. Every foster family who goes through training, they required to do some type of training. So ours was about 6 months to become a foster to adopt parent. And the foundation of knowledge is excellent. We met other couples going through the same thing, single parents going to become foster to adopt parents, amazing. They brought in the whole thing, like what it was like from soup to nuts. And there were some people who dropped out after, you know, a few months of the training. And that's, they say, normal because it is overwhelming. But if you're considering it, that's a really good way to figure it out. So we went and, you know, we plugged through and we were committed. And so when we adopted our children, they were placed with us. You know, we were warned about the honeymoon phase. So like, the honeymoon phase is, they've done much research on this, but for example, even when you get married, you got the honeymoon phase. You move to a new duty station, you got the honeymoon phase. I mean, a new job. Every piece of life has some type of honeymoon phase, and adopting from foster care is no different. So the first example I'll give you was my older daughter. She came raring to go, honeymoon phase. She was expecting that to last a long time. But the younger one, not so much. I mean, the older one was, you know, positive and jumping in and doing all these things. And the younger one would ask me questions like, how long do I have to live here? And when can I go back? And you know, when I'm 18, I'm going to find my real mom. Super. So those are the kind of things that were not really in my head that I'd be dealing with within the first few days, but there they were. But as I came to realize, you know, the older one, you know, wasn't being authentic either. She was just scared that we were going to leave her. And the younger one was just kind of testing us. So there's a lot of push pull with that. But at that moment, I realized, hey, we can do this. We just have to kind of make our expectations a little bit, because there is no perfectly adjusted child. And think about it, when you PCS, your kids go through a honeymoon phase too. Some love it, some hate it. Some, you're like, just hang on till Christmas, as a good friend of mine always says. But at some point, that whole saying, you're only as happy as your most unhappy child, I think I'm saying it right, is super true. So I think that, you know, it's not just adopted kids, but we all experience some type of honeymoon phase. Ours didn't last as long as I would have liked. I'm going to say probably maybe a few weeks at the most, but that's okay, because it's a huge step in the journey for both of you. And it was that way for us too. So everyone's got the honeymoon phase. Everybody knows how to handle it and work their way through it. And I wish that, you know, sometimes that we could have more of a honeymoon phase when we PCS. But I'm going to tell you right now, I've said this place sucks to my husband a few times. So my honeymoon phase has been very short at different places. Keep that in mind when you're adopting, or if you're thinking about the process, is that the honeymoon phase is not a guarantee. But what is a guarantee are the hiccups of raising children. And I'm sure all of you experience that. Biological, adoptive, whatever, we all have hiccups in raising kids. The girls that we, when we adopted them, they struggled with normal hiccups. But there were some unique situations for foster kids being enveloped into any family. And I'm going to talk about just one of them, because I think it kind of embodies the rest of them. And that is the first time they were given the family tree assignment at school. Okay, cue music if we had it, because that really is one of the hardest things as an adoptive parent, is to when your kids bring this assignment home. So they reacted in very different ways. Emily, my oldest, she actually decided that she didn't want to talk about her heritage because she knew nothing about it. Her father was from Mexico. And so she was very, very much against that. So she called my mom and researched my Irish roots with my great grandparents and great great parents and the potato famine. And so here she was, my little, you know, Hispanic daughter, presenting about the Irish potato famine and how it shaped her family. And so that was awesome. The class was awesome and she made it through and she was so proud of herself. She even baked soda bread for everybody. And then there was my youngest, who just looked at me and just ripped it up, like, not doing this. And I didn't do anything with that either, because you know what? It's a painful thing. But that was our first real hiccup that we had to see that, you know, so much, you know, is not going to be easy. And it's a small thing, but it kind of embodied a lot of identity issues and things later on, which you know, everybody has. So we moved to Texas after that. And that was great to be a part of our family. Still some more hiccups too, giving the girls 11 ready-made cousins sounds like a great idea, but it can be overwhelming. So, again, we kind of, just had to be patient through that. I mean, in my head, I got the Dr. Seuss book, oh, the places you'll go, it's gonna be so awesome. But, your version of awesomeness and their version of awesomeness, not really the same sometimes. So we got them into different interests and things like that. And, foster kids mainly survive. So expecting them to thrive right away is really unrealistic. And so it took time for them to figure out what their jam was and what their, music or sports or whatever. And I think we do that even with our biological kids when we PCS. We kind of hope they jump in and everything sticks and they're going to be okay. And sometimes you just need to have a little patience with that. So as we got older, there were some other hiccups, to kind of justify. So we actually had the normal teenage angst and issues, but we also had some deeper issues. And when that came to play, that lends into the resources piece I talked about earlier. We had a good experience with the Barry Robinson Center, and I've done a talk show with my cohort, Lisa Howard, about that. And I think it's being dropped in the links. You can listen to that Army Wife Talk Radio podcast that we did about the Barry Robinson Center and how they help military families. So that is a good resource. And even as a side note, if you are just any family right now struggling with any teen issues, behavioral, mental health, Lisa is a great resource. You can find her at L. Howard at the Barry Robinson Center.org. It's down below. She can point you in the right direction for any resource that you might need with your struggle. So again, when I talk about Lisa, I feel hopeful. So that leads me into my next segment, which is hope. And as the years progressed and the girls have been with us, they've accepted our family and their families, and we are just filled with hope. And I hope I don't tear up too much, because this always makes me tear up a little. We still treat birthdays and anniversaries and gotcha days with gentle care, because not every kid reacts the same. I mean, the gotcha day and the birthdays and the anniversaries, they're kind of rooted in pain for them sometimes, especially older kids who can remember a life before they came to live with you, which ours definitely did. So we brought them to live in 5 different states, Germany. We saw many countries, France, Ireland, England, Greece. We gave them ID cards. They were proud to be military brats and Palmers, and they adopted that role quite well. And, I was nervous because they had already moved, like I'd say maybe 8 to 10 times in their short lifetime. And here we were, we added about, maybe 8 or 9 more moves on top of that. I mean, my oldest daughter, she had 3 middle schools and 3 high schools. But you know what? She's okay. And she's married and has a child of her own. And she's learned to embrace everything and go with it. I'm really proud of her. She's also a very young Army wife. So super proud of her for that too. We gave them all those things, and we gave them security, and they gave us unconditional love. And they showed us, which was the most important thing, I think, in military life, is there can be joy in the suffering and the lessons in the pain. And that happens to all of us. So again, that's a journey I might not have experienced without them, because the greatest tour guide on any journey is hope. Whether you're traveling overseas or you're traveling on a journey of adoption, if you have hope in your heart, you can do a whole lot. With that, because I don't want to tear up anymore, I'm going to give you a few takeaways and then kind of end this. And I appreciate you spending the time with me today. The first takeaway is that if you're a military family considering adoption, Military One Source and National Military Family Association are excellent starting points. They both have guides specifically for adoption, and not just for foster care adoption, but for also, if you want to go through another country or do a birth adoption, even in the United States, they have all the information that you need, private adoption as well. The second thing is that there are many support groups out there, and you can join as many as you want. And sometimes it gets overwhelming, but if you're military specific and you really just want to feel out other people's stories like mine, a really good one is the Facebook group called MAPS, and that's Military Adoptive Parent Support. There's a ton of resources on there. I highly suggest you use the search tab for your topics, because it can just be overwhelming. And the admin who run that they're just fantastic. They have all these things tabbed and files. So check everything that they have out there for that. Finally, I'll leave you with this. We have a saying in our house, life is messy, love big. It's kind of like my credo. And you look on Facebook and all these other Instagram, everything looks perfect and great. And we've talked about this before, but in the end, nothing's going to be perfect. And you just have to love it hard enough to go away or to overcome, or, you know, and when love's not enough, that's when you go back to hope. But I think we do that really well in the military. We love each other's kids. We help each other out. And I think you're definitely, as a military family like us, you're definitely in a position to really do some good. Thanks for taking the time to listen to me today. I can be reached at Kathleen@armywifenetwork.com. My website is Life is Messy, Love Big. Shocker. It's a work in progress. I switched over to a Wix, so be patient with that. And then as we wrap up, you can be sure to catch up on all our podcasts on Army Wife Talk Radio, which are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Spotify. And just go to our website in general. There's so many resources have been put together over the last decade to help all military spouses on pretty much any topic that you would like. So thank you very much. This is Kathy Palmer, Army Wife Network content editor, signing out. I appreciate you listening.
Thank you for tuning in to Army Wife Talk Radio. The views and opinions expressed in our show are personal. AWTR is in no way affiliated with the Department of Defense or any other branch of the armed services. Inclusion in our show does not reflect endorsement by the DOD, any local government, or their agencies. Until the next episode, head over to armywifenetwork.com to connect with all of our engaging resources. Engage, educate, encourage. AWN is your source for military life empowerment.